ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
एवं
सम्मोहयन् विष्णुम् विमोहम्
विश्वा
मोहनम् स्वयैव माययाजो अपि स्वयम् एव
विमोहितः
एवं सम्मोहयन्
विष्णुम्
विमोहम् विश्वमोहनम् स्वयैव मायया जोऽपि स्वयमेव विमोहितः एवं
In this way,
sammohayan,
wanting to mystify,
Vishnum,
the all-pervading Lord Krishna,
Vimoham,
who can never be mystified,
Vishvamoham,
but who mystifies the entire universe, Svaya,
by his,
Brahma's own.
Indeed. Mayaya,
by mystic power.
Aja,
Lord Brahma.
Api,
even.
Svayam,
himself.
Eva,
certainly.
Vimohita,
was put into bewilderment.
Became mystified. Translation. Thus, because
Lord Brahma
wanted to mystify the all-pervading Lord Krishna, who can never be mystified, but who, on the contrary, mystifies the entire universe, he himself was put into bewilderment by his own mystic power. Purport. Brahma wanted to bewilder Krishna, who bewilders the entire universe. The whole universe is under Krishna's mystic power, mama maya duratyaya. But Brahma wanted to mystify him. The result was that Brahma himself was mystified, just as one who wants to kill another may himself be killed. In other words, Brahma was defeated by his own attempt. In a similar position are the scientists and philosophers who want to overcome the mystic power of Krishna. They challenge Krishna saying, "What is God? We can do this and we can do that." But the more they challenge Krishna in this way, the more they are implicated in suffering. The lesson here is that we should not try to overcome Krishna. Rather, instead of endeavoring to surpass him, we should surrender him to him. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam bhaja. Instead of defeating Krishna, Brahma himself was defeated, for he could not understand what Krishna was doing. Since Brahma, the chief person within the universe, was so bewildered, what is to be said of so-called scientists and philosophers? Sarva dharmam prityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. We should give up all our tiny efforts to defy the arrangement of Krishna. Instead, whatever arrangements he proposes, we should accept. This is always better, for this will make us happy. The more we try to defeat the arrangement of Krishna, the more we become implicated in Krishna's maya. But one who has reached the point of surrendering to the instructions of Krishna, mam eva ye prapadnyante, is liberated. Free from Krishna maya, mayam etam tarantite. The power of Krishna is just like a government that cannot be overcome. First of all, there are laws, and then there is police power, and beyond that is military power. Therefore, what is the use of trying to overcome the power of the government? Similarly, what is the use of trying to challenge Krishna? From the next verse, it is clear that Krishna cannot be defeated by any form, kind of mystic power. One gets even a little power of scientific knowledge when tries to defy God. But actually, no one is able to bewilder Krishna. When Brahma, the chief person within the universe, tried to bewilder Krishna, he himself was bewildered and astonished. This is the position of the conditioned soul. Brahma wanted to mystify Krishna, but he himself was mystified. The word Vishnu is significant in this verse. Vishnu pervades the entire material world, whereas Brahma merely occupies one subordinate post. Yasyaika nishvasi dikala matavalam yat jivanti loma vilaja janam nanata. Brahma Samhita 5:48. The word Nata, which refers to Lord Brahma, is plural because there are innumerable universes and innumerable Brahmas. Brahma is but a tiny force. This was exhibited in Dwarka when Krishna called for Brahma. One day when Brahma came to see Krishna at Dwarka, the doorman, at Lord Krishna's request, asked, "Which Brahma are you?" Later, when Brahma inquired from Krishna whether this meant that there was more than one Brahma, Krishna smiled and at once called for many Brahmas from many universes. The four-headed Brahma of this universe then saw innumerable other Brahmas coming to see Krishna and offer their respects. Some of them had 10, some had heads, some had 20, some had 100, and some had 1,000,000 heads. Upon seeing this wonderful exhibition, the four-headed Brahma became nervous and began to think of himself as no more than a mosquito in the midst of many elephants. Therefore, what can Brahma do to bewilder Krishna? So here we have an example of this being bewildered by one's own abilities. And the example here then is given is Lord Brahma himself. So he's the head of our sampradaya, he's the original living entity in the universe. So then, if he is mystified, then we can understand that this example would apply to all. This is the beauty of the shastras, that the person who will speak or will be used as an example is one who then everybody could relate to. Otherwise, then the tendency will be, oh, that's different from my case. Right, you know, I'm like, you say something, oh, how you're wearing your cloth, you have to wear it like this, or be careful of it, or wash it in this way. And then, but that applies to the other person, because, you know, he has one colored cloth, I have another colored cloth, he's wearing white, I'm wearing saffron. So it doesn't apply to me. So this is the lack of vision, or lack of breadth of vision, is that the principle is cloth, how it works. It doesn't matter what color it is, it works in the same way. The aspect of color, then there's a detail you have to take into consideration. But other than that, then it works the same. So in this way, then this example of Brahma, he also works for us. It's not just connected to Lord Brahma. Okay, that's his problem, right? I'm not stealing Krishna's cows and calves, so it's nothing to do with me. But Prabhupada's pointing out the scientists and the philosophers. They have their own idea how to operate the material energy, and they have their own idea of how it's put together, what is existence, how it works, you know, who's in control, how it's operated. So then if we look at it, that includes us. Because if it didn't include us, then why we're still sitting here? I mean, of course, anybody, please excuse anyone who has, you know, come here as a, you know, sent by the Lord, you know, personally, when it's eternal associates, then, but, you know, we're speaking in general here, is that if we're sitting here, it means we're sitting here because we have our own philosophy and we have our own idea how we are going to operate material energy. That's why we're here. Right? If we didn't have this, we wouldn't be sitting here. So that's the whole idea, is that then as we understand this point, to that degree we're free from it. Then we're uplifted from the material energy. Otherwise, the tendency is we're the controller, we're the enjoyer of this place, and we have our means to do it. You know, we have our philosophy, right? We can buy our philosophy, then anything can be, what's that called? rationalized, or you can rationalize anything, you know, like that, that this is all, you know, okay. And in this way, then we go about making our arrangements, enjoying things, doing things like this. So then this becomes a difficulty. So it's being pointed out is that Krishna knows everything. Krishna. So if we think it will work, then we only become bewildered ourselves. Brahma was bewildered here, it says in the text, by his own potency. Krishna didn't even have to use his potency to bewilder us. He was bewildered by his own. Krishna expanded as the cows and cats. But what bewildered Brahma was his own potency. You know, therefore, Prabhupada gives an example. You want to kill somebody, in the attempt, you could get killed. So that's a common thing. You try to do anything to the devotees, then what is what you are doing to the devotees, or what is your purpose in doing it, that's what you'll get back yourself. Right? I think there's a story in the Krishna book. I think the king of Kashi, then he did some, I think some yagya or something, created some demon, sent that to, I think, Dwarka or something, Dwarka or Mathura, to bother Krishna. And when it got there, then, lo and behold, there was Sudarshan Chakra. Sudarshan Chakra, you know, kind of created in the that demon that had been created, the understanding that this is not going to work. You know, it comes between this demon and Sudarshan. Sudarshan's definitely going to win. So then the demon decided, okay, enough of this. And he went, of course, with some encouragement, being chased by Sudarshan. He was chased all the way back to Kashi. And then when the demon got back to Kashi, then he decided, okay, he was sent to destroy, you know, Krishna's city and all these kind of things. So then he decided, you know, he has to do his duty. So then he destroyed the city of the person who sent him. Like that. So that's the nature of these things, all these mystical arts like that. Is they may work on people who either don't have them or who are not powerful, but if they're used on the devotees, then it always backfires sooner or later. That's just the way they work. So I mean, if it backfires on Lord Brahma, then why it won't backfire on anybody else? So that's the position, is that that's why it's recommended to not have ill will towards the devotees or towards anything else, because generally speaking, ill will create a problem for the person that is directed at. It will always reduce, it will always create something. It will have an effect on the subtle body. But for the devotees, then Krishna takes care of this. It means if the devotee is supposed to have some reaction that would come normally on the mundane plane in the form of such reaction, that reaction will happen, but it's not because of the person's ill will, it's because of Krishna's arrangement. But the ill will only create a reaction in the person who has it. Because you're dealing with devotees. It's a whole different ballgame. That's the thing. It's completely different than anything we're used to dealing with. It appears that we're controlling, that we're doing, we're getting ahead, things are happening. But actually, it doesn't work like that. It can't work like that. Because it's Krishna who's in control. It's his pastime to allow us to think we're in control. Right? You know, so it's like the father's there, the child's on his back, you know, and the child says, okay, go here, go there, everything. So the child feels it's the pleasure of the father to allow the child to think that they are, you know, making them go here and there and doing whatever they like. But that's their affection. Actually, a father's going there because he's going there. He wants to go that side, he goes. It's not that the child's actually making him go. The child has no force. It's only the affection. So here it's both ways. In the conditioned soul, then it's one way, Krishna's affection for us. So he allows us to think, yes, I'm doing, right? The living entity wants to feel I'm doing something great, I'm doing something special. So then he arranges it. Okay, you have the karma to get the results of something great, something special. And then afterwards, then you think, yes, see how I've done. I'm so great. I'm so special. Right? But there's a reaction for that, because we're not great, we're not special. Then in the future, when we want to do something great and special, then now we don't have the credits for getting it. So now we won't get it. Then we get frustrated. Then we'll lose our interest in doing something great and special. Then when we come to that platform, we humble ourselves. Then it becomes that austerity is there. Then we get the credit for being great and doing something special. That's the thing is, because Krishna is arranging it, it appears that the two are happening in one place at the one time. Therefore, we get so much faith that, yes, I did, therefore I got the result. No, it's just that Krishna arranged it. Then it happened. Because in some, we, so many times we do, we don't get the result. Sometimes we do, we get the result. If 100 times we don't get the result, one time we get, we'll go, see? Like that. See? Aren't I great? What about the other, 100 times? Hey, don't be cynical. Well, you should see the good, Why are you always looking at the bad, So it's convenient, and it works, it's popular, Basically, everybody goes along with it because you don't want everyone to point out your faults and your, shortcomings. So therefore, naturally, okay, you'll be broad-minded, see the other guy's good qualities. Of course, he has to see your good qualities, and then it's very nice, It's a very common thing. You get a group of materialists together, and they'll be praising each other and telling how everything, and they're all nonsense. And because each one is agreeable to say the other one's good, then they all decide that they're all good people. Like that. Like this. So, this is principle. So we have to be careful of this, that we fall into this trap thinking that we're the ones that are doing. Brahma thought he's doing. He's the doer. He's the controller. And he thought he's going to come back and have some fun, right? Okay, here's this little kid. Everyone says he's God, right? That, he's taking his cowherd boys and calves. Let's see what happens. Okay, after 1 year, and then he's sitting there alone, out there, what happened to him? Parents threw him out of the house. He lost all his 900,000 cows. No friends to play with, and it's like that. No, he comes back, and it's still a riot going on. They're having great fun, right? So then he can go, all those kids are asleep, so who are these kids, Who put them here? Because you're not talking about a few kids, I mean, Krishna's calves alone were 900,000, right? Then you got everybody else, Or was this, this is calves, so they were less than that. But still, generally a cow is giving milk, so then there would be quite a few lakhs, everyone would expect. Then there's the, unlimited, and each other boy has his cows. So you're talking about millions of cows, and who knows, millions of cowherd boys, or hundreds of thousands. There's a lot of cowherd boys. Like that. So then he's quite bewildered. So these things, the whole idea is we should see, the story is there, that is the aspect is there. So it's attractive, it attracts us to mind, attracts the attention. Nice stories, nice things happening. So then that attracts the mind to Krishna. But at the same time, there's some of the mind that's not attracted to Krishna. So then that should be applied on what is to be learned from the pastime. So there's always two things to gain from the pastime. One is the attraction for Krishna because of his wonderful pastimes. And so that's the always remember Krishna. And then the other is never forget Krishna. In other words, what is the principle to be learned from the story that we apply in our life to remove those obstacles that we're there for and forgetting Krishna? So both these are there. So then this gives very nice points that these are there, that we always have to be careful of our own idea and that we are the one that's actually making things happen. We're going to control things and make things happen separately from Krishna. Right? That's the atheist. The theist knows that God's doing it and I just have my part. The atheist thinks, no, I'm doing it. So that's our general habit, is the atheist. Because if we were fully actually theistic, then we would understand God as a person, how he is actually doing anything, and we would surrender. So when that happens, then things go nice. But until we surrender, then we see that there's a problem. Right? In the piety, right? We're pious, we're religious. It gets us good results. Like that. One should always remember, religion is business. right? I am performing a religious activity because it gets me good results. That's why it's done. So to practice religion only to please God, that's bhakti. That's in another category. That's something we're not used to. It's basically unheard of. We're nice, good, because we'll get a nice, good result. We don't want a bad result. Either we have a bad result, we want to get rid of it, or we're getting a good result, we want to keep it. Right? So either of that is what we're working. So one has to understand and go beyond that. That's why Prabhupada always mentions this aspect of doing business with God. You know, I'll be nice, I'll be good. But then you take care of this, you take care of that. So that's a lower level. At least it's pious. But more than that is, why should you be doing these things anyway? Okay, you're going to the temple, you're doing these things. Why you should do it? Just because of the religious benefit? Or because it pleases Krishna? If it's done to please Krishna, then that's another thing. That's bhakti. I'm going to the temple just pleases Krishna. I'm not going to the temple because if I don't go to the temple, maybe something bad will happen to me and my family. No, I'm going because it pleases Krishna. Like that. And then in the process, naturally the family is taken care of. That's the thing. Bhakti already includes karma and jnana. We don't have this separately endeavor. Right? Like sometimes, Prabhupada says, you don't have to separately endeavor for austerity and this. We already have it built in. Sometimes I've heard devotees discuss, what can they do, what practices can they do to become more humble, right? I mean, it's already built into the movement, the interactions and this and that. You don't have to lay down in front of the temple and, move the doormat and lay down there, but then you might feel proud because I'm as good as the doormat, so I should lay down and put the doormat on top. I'm lower than the doormat, right? And then people walk over, and then you can be very humble, and then someone walks around and says, hey, you're supposed to step on the mat. Where are you going? Like this. There's no need to separately endeavor. That's the wonderfulness of the whole process, is that it's so nice that already austerity is there. Right? It means it's like to study the scriptures, to teach the scriptures, to practice it, that's already austerity. The four regular principles, those are austerity. To perform sadhana, that's austerity. So we don't have to separate, we don't have to go out and stand out in the middle of the field and like that in the sunshine or, the cold, up to our neck in the cold water, or these things. These are, for those who aren't situated in bhakti, but already just, trying to pull oneself out of the material energy, that's already austere. Or even if you look at it more, just being in the material energy is already austere. Even if you're in the lap of luxury. That's the example it gives for the Brahmin. It says, even if he's, dressed with a garland, and sitting nicely and comfortably and all that, but he's studying the scriptures, like that, then he is performing the most rigid austerities. It says, up to the ends, the tips of his nails. You can't get more austere than that. Like that. So that's austerity. That's what we see, it's the demons who do these terrible austerities, stand on one leg and then offer their own flesh into the fire, into the yajna. So they do that, because then for them, that's austere, But for the devotees, then it's understood. It's just performing your duties that Krishna wants you to do. That's your austerity. And doing that, then one pleases Krishna. Krishna is very subtle, so it doesn't, it's the pleasing him is also subtle. It's not gross. Right? Gross, that's for Lord Shiva will interact with those people like that. Means you can please him also very pleasantly. But if you're a little bit too wild, then Shiva will acknowledge your austerities. And this reason that this whole concept of the scientists and the philosophers, that's already due to Krishna's mystifying potency. right? They already think that there is something special, something wonderful. It's already, they're already bewildered by Krishna. So if we want to go beyond this, it's only by Krishna's grace. Like Balaram, even Balaram couldn't understand. So then Balaram, by asking Krishna, approaching Krishna, then he was informed, then he knew what was going on. Otherwise, he could know. Now, if Balaram can't understand, then we're not going to understand. So only by Krishna's grace, then we can understand. Any questions on this? Yes?
I want to ask you, because I don't know if I understand. You tell the action is Krishna arrangement, or because I think the action, why the action is for your action or for your karma?
Okay, so the reaction is from Krishna, but it's generally thought that it's coming from our karma. Is that the main thing to understand here is you want to correct something wrong, the method is the same. Right? Does that make some sense? Like you want to cook rice. So if you're cooking it for Krishna, or you're not cooking it for Krishna, it's still the same. You still have to put the same amount of water and cook it the same way. It doesn't change. So in the same thing as what is karma there for? What's the actual purpose of this whole karma? Right. The real purpose is to reform the living entity. But reformation means what? Reformation means coming back to becoming aware of our relationship with Krishna and taking that up, and that is becoming a devotee. That's actual reformation. Anything less than that is only a partial reformation. Right? So the whole cycle of karma is just that you do things that are in line with God's laws, you get a good result. Then you do things that are not in line with God's laws, you get a bad result. You know, it's just like you train the dog. You know, you do something, he does something right, he gets his little fisty. He does something wrong, you whack him with the newspaper. So even the dog, after a while, starts to like add it up and go, okay, I do this, I get the newspaper, and I do that, I get the biscuit. So then after a while, they drop those things with the newspaper and accept those things with the biscuit. So it's the same thing, is that you do things that are connection with Shastra, then you get your wealth, you get your fame, you get your position, you get your family life, you get all these things. And you do the opposite, then you lose those things. So then the tendency is that over many, many lifetimes, someone becomes pious. Like that. But what is the real reason you study the scriptures? Why study the scriptures? Only for this much? No, it's to go back to Godhead, to know God, to know Krishna. That's the purpose. These others are secondary. You know, it's not the primary. The primary is to give up material life and take up spiritual life, because this is what the scriptures mean. But if you can't take that much of a jump, at least you should follow the scriptures. Because if you were following the scriptures, then the lifestyle you'll lead and the principles it's based on are very similar to, I mean, all you have to do is adjust a few things in this Krishna consciousness. Right? Instead of your karmakanda guru, now you have a spiritual guru. Right? Instead of doing your activities because it's your duty, because it's for, because it, you know, just the scriptures say it should be done or it gets a good result, now you're doing it because it pleases Krishna. And that result is pleasing, is for Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's, can be understood, then we can see is then the reformation process is actually meant to reform the devotees. Right? Those who want to go back to Godhead. But just as following the scripture will give result to the non-devotees, in the same way the law of karma will also reform them, but only because they're only interested materially, it will only reform them in their sphere of activity. Right? It means if they're in the realm of jnana, it'll only reform them in that realm. If they're in the realm of karma, it'll only reform them in that realm. But the devotee is in the realm of bhakti, so it reforms them there. Does that make some sense? Okay.
Can
Let's do one.
No.
She doesn't agree. This is not a good proposal. Two. Yeah, it's like, you know, one for you, one for me. Two. One for you, two for me. One for you.
You say we come to the temple and we make all, or we must make all for please Krishna. And I want them, well, I go to the temple and I make all this because I need the devotees association and I need to love Krishna. O sea, que it's not ni for my pleasure, ni for Krishna pleasure, sino because I need. O sea, some devotees, I know some devotees very special, they don't need this association, they don't need to look Krishna in the temple, because they look Krishna every place, they have Krishna in the temple, entonces they don't need coming to the temple, no? But for me, it's because I need, if I don't have devotees association, if I not coming to the temple, I can't. I was staying in Maya very quickly, no? Mm-hmm. But I can't even question me. You know, I don't know if it's good, this, or if not, the one to the rest of
the world. Need means, point is need means is what is your goal. So then the whole point is we need that association, but what is special about that association? Why do we need to see Krishna and see the devotees? Because that means they're Krishna conscious. But why do we want to be Krishna conscious? What's the purpose of that? That makes sense. Why be Krishna conscious? I mean, it's just something to do. I mean,
because you're
poor.
I cannot be devotee. I cannot look or something in Krishna. If I am alone, I cannot. I need.
No, that's there. So you need it, but what is the result of that need? The result has to get you something. So what? You need, because if you don't go to the temple and you don't associate with devotees, you fall into Maya. So why do you want to be Krishna conscious and not be in Maya?
I love Krishna.
Okay,
I love
more
Krishna than Maya.
Okay, yeah, he does look a little better. So then especially some of the other wild farms, Chandi, just a little while. Yeah. Imagine your mother running around with no clothes on, she's cut off her own head. Right? She's catching the head, the blood from her head in a bowl, and in the other hand she's got her head. Like that. It gets a little tough sometimes. Probably no one would even notice she wasn't even dressed. We go on by unnoticed. So then we need to be Krishna conscious. One, it's our inherent need, but two, is there, we want to be Krishna conscious, that should be because that is pleasing to Krishna. The beginning is because it's pleasing to us. But we're only pleased because Krishna is pleased. Right? Otherwise we couldn't be pleased. So even if it doesn't have that complete consciousness, still we're only happy because Krishna's happy. Then when you recognize that it makes Krishna happy, then we become even more happy. So that's the nice thing about bhakti, is that any touch with it in any way, shape, or form is always beneficial. So you can imagine if it's done with the proper understanding of consciousness, then how much more one will get. It's never that it's less. Only sometimes it's pointed out that if you don't do this, then it's not good. It's simply to inspire us to move ahead more. You know, otherwise we tend, because of the mode of goodness, to get conditioned. So then everything's kind of all right. You know, I mean, that's very common. Is that we come to Krishna consciousness, we're very dynamic in Krishna consciousness, we're very, you know, careful to apply the process. Then for many years, then we start, you know, the results are there, it's easier to do, the mind is peaceful, results are there, things are taken care of. Then we tend to coast, And so then at one point, then Krishna decides now it's time to wake up, you know. Been doing long enough, now it should be that Krishna can now shake it, but from doing Krishna kind, the faith is strong because of doing for so long. So then one can go to deeper and deeper levels. But one has to be careful that sometimes we get conditioned that mode of goodness, and the loss of that mode of goodness, then we start to doubt Krishna consciousness, because we can't tell the difference between religion and bhakti. Right? Means bhakti is the ultimate religion, but we're taking it with the external form of bhakti, the engagement of the body, mind, and words, that alone, the form of it, that's the devotion. No, the devotion is having used it. Right? The cauliflower, cooking for Krishna, the cauliflower is not the devotion. It's the medium of the devotion. Right? So now, okay, we're cooking great, we're a great cook, everyone says they're a great cook, but is the devotion there? And if it's not, then Krishna may arrange that something happens and it doesn't go nicely to wake us up. Then we have two choices. Then surrender and, you know, become serious like we were before. And it'll be easier now because we have so much more practice. But at the same time, there's a difficulty because now we have an ego. You know, that I am, you know, great this, great that. So many things. So in Krishna wakes up and we get attached to facilities that come with that. So when Krishna shakes those up, then some move forward and some get distracted. You know? Means we're here today, we're alive. Right? So that means we're being taken care of. By whatever method. Either we're doing it, someone else is doing it, but we're being taken care of. Just that we have the ability to even take care of ourselves. Right? That we ourselves go out and do something. You know? We have something that we generate our own income, we create our own facilities. But that ability is still coming from Krishna. Right? Different, yeah. So then it's going on. So then we don't have to worry that it won't go on. But we become attached to these things, so then we think, you know, things will go. Either I'm doing it or others were doing it and they'll do it forever. But the point is we're supposed to be Krishna conscious. If we're Krishna conscious, then it works. Right? Then whether Krishna changes the arrangements or he doesn't change the arrangements, we don't have any problem. Whether Yudhishthira is sitting as the crowned emperor of the world, recognized by the demigods, right? Varuna himself came with a monster conch from the ocean, right? Everybody else is just little conches when they bathe the emperor. He brought a big special conch. Just seeing that conch shell, Duryodhana couldn't tolerate. And not only that, who's bringing the conch? Okay, so he found a big conch shell. Okay, he's got a bigger conch shell than I got. Okay, you can handle that. Maybe a little jealous. But the conch shell is brought by Varuna himself. Right? Varuna's there. He's doing the bathing. That is more than, you know, a good, upstanding demon can handle. There's only so much a demon can handle, you know. So that's the thing is that it's going on now, but Yudhishthira doesn't mind. He goes from that position to living out in the forest with nothing. Not only that, it's not that, okay, he's kicked out in the forest now by his own arrangements and allies and get himself in. No, he has to live out there for 12 years and be happy. Right? Well, everything that he's amassed is all being enjoyed by Duryodhana. Right? So, they don't mind, right? You see any problem in the story that they're getting upset? No, they don't. So that's the thing, is that whether it goes nicely or doesn't go nicely, they always remember Krishna. That's the point. Prabhupada gives the example of the rice husking machine. Whether it's in heaven or hell, it still does the same work. So the devotee, wherever he is, he does the same work. He remembers Krishna, serves Krishna. So we always have to be careful that the getting conditioned by this emotive goodness. Then we think everything's all right, and it will go on eternally like that. So then, now after some time, then Krishna shakes that a little bit. So now it's either we surrender to Krishna, or we doubt the process, doubt Krishna consciousness, doubt the mission, doubt the devotees, doubt something, because we are beyond doubt, of course, and we are unblameable, right? It means everything that goes wrong, it's always someone else's fault, it's never our fault, right? It means like if you have an argument with somebody, whether it's just or not, then whose side are we, advocating? The other person's side? Or our side? It's always our side. So, that's the difficulty. So one has to take it down and figure out why you're doing it. Like that. So being Krishna conscious is to please Krishna, therefore, then going to the temple, that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to need going to the temple. It means the beginning is that we do it because we're supposed to. And then later we do it because we want to. Oh, there you go. That you wanted to get into for the third.
Is there a preventative way of pulling into that little trap as you say, about being content with the moment of goodness, or being bewildered by your own false ego?
Main thing is being conscious. Is that for preaching, then generally the good side is always point out that if you follow the laws of God, then only things will be prosperous. We point out how the material world is not working nicely because people aren't following the laws of God. So we'll use those things for bringing around awakening of consciousness of people that there is such a thing as the difference between the laws of God and not. And those who follow it get one result, those who don't get another result. But we should avoid applying that in our own life. Like you see this, I'm not sure where it is. Maybe it's in, I've seen the paintings, but I'm not sure if I've seen them. I don't remember. They're from the Gita, where Krishna's pointing out, saying the shloka about the demigods means because we do sacrifice and the demigods are pleased and they give all the benefits and all that. So, you see this nice painting of a nice Krishna conscious family sitting there and they're all smiles and like something out of a Jehovah's Witness, And, it's a nice sunny day, bright and nice out there. They're sitting on the lawn like that and, the birds, the butterflies and the demigods are there showering with big smiles also, showering everything and it's all beautiful and wonderful. So we use that to point out, you want material benefit, then you're doing it the wrong way. It means you have to approach God, Is that one of Krishna, Sarva, the one in that Moksha Kama? So this then is, whatever you want, approach the Lord. He's the one that gets it. Right? It means even your karma is still, he has to sanction. Even you want Brahmandri to think, he has to sanction. You want yogic siddhis, he has to sanction. And if you want bhakti, he has to sanction. So, but we should be careful that we ourselves don't become conditioned to that. So that means we have to be conscious. We always have to be aware. We have to be introspective, which is something that is not overly... How you say? It should be a constant factor in our life. When things are going nice, we should be introspective. When things are not going nice, we should be introspective. Because if it's going nice, why is it going nice? How is it working? Then we're conscious of this because of Krishna. If it's not going nice, then we see the reason it's not going nice is because of us. So then we start to see. Otherwise, the tendency is either to not be introspective because it's too scary, or we're only introspective at certain moments when it should be, like that, you know, the guy's there, something's gone wrong in his life, and he thinks about it, and it's starting to get him down, but then he decides, hey, this is nonsense, and he just gives that up, and then everything becomes wonderful. Like that. So the problem is introspection is generally self-centered, meaning our conditioned self, rather than the spiritual self. The self-realization means that we, the soul, are conscious of ourself as the soul, and our conditioning as someone connected with material energy. So then that means the self-realization means we have to be able to contemplate on the self before our ultimate benefit, how to spiritually elevate ourselves. How is our, what is the use of our conditioned nature? How is it being used in devotional service? What are its strengths? What are its weaknesses? Are we seeing that? And it's, okay, we have a few weaknesses, but everybody has a few weaknesses, so, okay. No, it's the weakness there. What is it from? What is it there? How is it getting in our way? You know, is it itself part of the nature, so it just needs to be purified? Or is it an anartha that has to be gotten rid of? We have to distinguish. Like that, you know. If we're rough with people, then that's an anartha. But our desire to interface with people, then that's a doho, needs to be associated. That just needs to be purified. So our association has to be purified of its roughness. So association can stay, but the roughness has to go. Because one is impurity, one is conditioned nature. Right? So you're not going to get rid of the nature. It's going to be like that. But it can be in its pure state. It can be Krishna conscious. Then all these other bad qualities go away. So if we remain conscious, then that is best. So either you take the quickest path, just become conscious of Krishna at all times, just think of him and his pastimes and his wonderful devotees and all that. And if you can do that, that's what's recommended. If you can't do that, then what's recommended is you do those activities that will awaken that by hearing the Lord's pastimes and associating with devotees. You're chanting all these things, but then at the same time you contemplate the material energy, how it functions and how we're entrapped in it. How it functions, see the modes of nature, how they work, how they do all these different things. And see how we have bought into it, and then try to analyze that and remove that. So if you can't do that one, if you can't do that, then you just do your service, fully absorb yourself in service. Sadhana, service, association, that will purify us. Then the brain will start to work. Then we can analyze. Then we can come. Then that analyzation will free us from the material world. It doesn't give us Krishna, it frees us from the material world. Right? That's the point. That's why there was a whole misunderstanding. You know, some years back, it was very, very popular to push this point of the mode of goodness. That you have to get to the point of the mode of goodness. But getting the point of goodness is only useful then from goodness to go to pure goodness. And we're only interested in pure goodness. That point was missed. So then it was, you have to lead a life of goodness. But why would you have to lead a life of goodness? Who said? You know? So if you look who said, it's God said. So why would God say? Because then from there you can get to bhakti. But if you're not cultivating bhakti simultaneously, then so what? Cows are also, their bodies, their conditioned natures are goodness, the soul's in ignorance. Yeah. The body, their gross body, their subtle body, their identity, it's all goodness. But the soul itself's in ignorance. You know? And that's what Prabhupada points out. They're in goodness, pigeons are vegetarian. You know, you take swans. You know, they marry one another swan. Oh, it's lifelong. They'll never marry another swan. You know? So I mean, you can find all virtuous qualities within the animal kingdom. You know, ants, bees, very much, you know, team spirit work there, you know, sacrifice for the community. You know, you see ants, so they're going to go and they have to get across some water. Some ants are going first so that all the others go across the top. They may survive, they may not survive. So all these great qualities, I mean, they get, you know, so many, every day I'm sure the queen ant could give out, you know, awards to, you know, the worker ants for the sacrifices that they've done for the country, you know, their ant hill, you know, their nation, you know. So that's there, but unless it's done to please Krishna, it's nice, but useless, because after you get yourself to the top of the samsara, then you go down to the bottom. It's natural. They just keep going around. It's just the way it works. So unless one's conscious, then one will fall into that trap. It's guaranteed. So that's the thing, is to awaken consciousness. The Prabhupada said, first become conscious, then become Krishna conscious. So if you're conscious, then you do. So that's why the rules and regulations are there, to make you conscious of everything. Right? The points of cleanliness. Then you can't touch this, can't touch that, can't do this. You become conscious of everything. Right? You've just eaten a meal. Right? Then you have a conversation, you know, with somebody, you know, while you're eating. So then maybe 5-10 minutes go by or more after the meal. But you still have to be conscious of your hands dirty. Otherwise, during that conversation, you know, you're going to get an itch. You know, you got to move somebody comes and asks for something. And then if you touch yourself with that hand, you get dirty. You know, you touch other things, or when you're going out, you're touching this and that. So you have to be conscious. It means the whole time you have to be able to hold a conversation and remember that your hand's dirty. So that takes consciousness. Some will say that's fanatic. But those are fanatics. Right? Only a fanatic says it's fanatic. Right? Like that. It means you can do that fanatically. That can be pointed out. But someone who says anybody who is conscious or worries about that's a fanatic, they're a fanatic. They're an irreligious fanatic. They're very determined to maintain their irreligious vow. You know, their whatever Western values that they've grown up with, they're determined to maintain them. Right? So that's all. So those aren't. These are there. Whatever Prabhupada's given us, that's not fanatic. If you want to know fanatic, we can discuss. Like that. It means the amount of things that Prabhupada's given us are minimal. Just the essence. Chaturmas, right? There's four rules. What you don't eat in 4 months. The full rules are probably over 50 or 60 rules. And, so, he's given us four. Right? Kadasi, so many rules. Probably just says no grains and beans. Like that. And even then, we can't talk. So that's the, yeah. We always have to be careful of that. Is that we don't become conditioned by the results, the good results of bhakti, and we attribute it to ourselves. It's been devotional service that comes. It's not because of us. Krishna gives the credit. It's like, who won the battle? Right? Krishna. Krishna already showed Arjuna before it started. They've all been killed. It's already over. But for his pastime, he engages Arjuna. So it looks like, but who gets the credit? Well, we think the battlefield with Kurukshetra, who's the hero? It's Arjuna. Like that. But you generally see in all those cases that Krishna wasn't intervening, then it wouldn't happen. Krishna intervened with Bhishma, Krishna intervened with Karna, Krishna intervened with so many others. But still, Arjuna gets the credit. So that's Krishna's mystifying potency. He's doing everything, but for fun, he gives the credit to everybody else. For him, that's fun. Because he doesn't have to prove it. For us, we'd say, well, why? You know, if I did it, you know, I'd want the result. Because we're not the controller. So we want to get that title. Yes, you are the controller. You know? Because we're not. We never were, never will be. But God is the controller. So for him, it's fun to pretend he's not. You know? Just like he had the same thing as Louis the 14th, right? 16th got his head cut off, right? 14th. So he was known as the Sun King. Very opulent, powerful, this and that. You know what they used to do for fun? They used to dress up as ordinary cowherd, you know, men and women, you know, just the village people, and go out and take care of the cows and do stuff. That's what they do for fun. He is the king, right? The cowherd men don't dress up for fun as cowherd magic. Oh, no, that's work. You know, but then for fun they would do it, you know, dress up, you know, and all like this, go out and then have a good laugh and then go back to the palace, of course. So for Krishna it's fun. Fun giving the credit everywhere else, because that creates rasa, because for him rasa is important. What's the big deal? Okay, he did it, so what? Okay, you did the thing, so what? Now if nobody praises you for it, if you don't get any benefits from it, if it doesn't increase relationships, who cares? Right? You know, it's just like that man was anxiety, and he went to Sanatana Goswami, and, you know, and he heard about he had a touchstone, so he wanted that because he was lost all his money and all that. So he got the touchstone in. He asked Sanatana Goswami about it. He says, yeah, I keep it over there. You know where you sweep. Generally, if you're out in the village, you can't sweep the whole forest. So you sweep a certain area that you're taking care of, and it goes to a pile somewhere. So Sanatana Goswami said, yeah, it's over there somewhere in that pile. So that's the garbage pile. So he went over there, looked through, got it. He was very happy. Went up, touched everything. That's when he thought, hey, wait a minute. Now, if this he keeps in the garbage, where does he really keep his valuable? So he came back. So then he got the whole thing. So it's the idea is that you get, means by knowing that this higher element is there, then we'll go beyond this lower. We'll go beyond the goodness. If the goodness is so nice, we're so happy in that, then bhakti must be even more. So we always have to be aware of what's there, what is the thing. That's the purpose of studying tattva, is to do that. So that means, and then, so Sanatana, he had the wealth. How much wealth he wanted, he just has to take that stone and touch it. But to him, what was more important was the rasa of Krishna's name. So that's the point. God already has everything. And we also are the same. We're looking for the relationship of what we do. We say, I want money, I want facility, I want this and that. No, we don't. We want relationship. But we're illusioned by Maya to think that it's the money that I want, or it's the facilities that I want, or it's the prestige, or the power, or the... No. That's Maya. It means if you're the king of the whole world and nobody cares, you think you're going to be happy doing that for long? Right? You conquer the whole world, and everyone, okay, yeah, okay. You know. Then you won't live. You know, you have so much money, but if you can't interface with people with it, you can't impress them with it, or in some way get something out of it. You have the fanciest car, biggest house, and nobody cares. You think it means anything? Okay. Why does anybody need a Lamborghini? Right? What road can you drive at 350 kilometers? Name that. Even in Germany, the Autobahn, no one does more than 200. Because it's a two-lane highway. Right? You don't need it. It's prestige. You go, oh, wow. It puts you in a class of people. People are impressed. It's something people talk about. You know, and that. You know, you're guaranteed. You have a conversation. You just have this car. Everybody will talk about it. But if nobody talked about it, and then there wouldn't be one person on the planet with one. So that's the thing. Your money, your position. If people don't interface with you because of that, it doesn't enhance the relationship, no one would do anything. That's the bottom line. Why? Because that's the way Krishna is. Right? He already is God. He is the controller. So he's Atmarama. He's satisfied in that. We're not that, so we're not satisfied. But he is. But he performs activities and expands his opulences to taste rasa. So therefore, trying to be God, we're trying to expand our opulences to taste rasa. So if that's understood, then why you do it is for rasa, that relationship with the devotees in Krishna. So if that's understood, then that's what we'll endeavor for. But if we get illusioned by Maya, then we start to think that these things themselves are inherently good in themselves. That's the Maya. So, you know, association, studying, contemplation, these are the open secret tricks. Is that okay? You had something or just stretching? One little thing.
You were saying something very unusual. The devotee becomes great after just by studying. By someone who's maybe another devotee, maybe think he's just saying out of pride because he's not really an austerity. Maybe think. I think you spend more on the austerity of just getting rid of complete ego.
Yeah, austerity getting rid of ego.
Complete ego, because the devotee gives up almost all desire to be someone.
But the thing is, if you give up ego, means you're nothing special from the material platform. We want to be special. We're dying to be special. Because if then we're special, then from that, then we will get benefits. And then those benefits will again turn around into relationship. So it's like, it's really funny. It's like we grow rice to sell. So with that money, we can buy the rice that we want to eat. Right? So that's what we're doing. Relationship is there, but then we try to get work to get some opulences from that, so-called we can taste relationship. The man has a wife and kids. They're happy to have him at home. But is he at home? No, he's out at the office doing a 16-hour day so he can get farther ahead, so he can get more money and more facility just for his family. Right? Family is just saying, hey, we just, why don't you just, you know, why don't you do a, you know, 8-hour day like everybody else and spend some time around the house. So he already has the relationship, but he's going, trying to go farther to get more to so-called the relationship. You ask, means the guy's not out there. No man is out there doing that much work except for he's doing it for somebody. But if you ask the people he's doing it for, many times they would just rather do less and have more interaction. You know? So we get caught up in these things because there's the idea that I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. Rather than I have my duties, I do my duties, whatever's supposed to come from those duties, I'll get, whether I work more or less. Right? So then it becomes more balanced that way. So it becomes more balanced in that you start to think, I'm servant of Krishna, so then what is my service to Krishna? I perform that. And then whatever the results are there, you know, due to the laws of karma, this and that, I don't worry about that. That's up to Krishna. He gives, doesn't give, this and that. I'm doing it to please him. And then whatever results come, then we're happy with that and live with that. More comes, we did nice, but less comes. Sudama Vipra, he had nothing, he was happy. He had a palace, he was happy. It didn't change his service. He would still just sit down and perform his austerity of breathing and teaching. Like that. So that's the difficulty. And because it's a matter of faith. Giving up ego actually is based on faith. Because we're so used to the principle that if I have a position, I have influence. If I have influence, I have control. If I have control, I have facility. I have facility, I have enjoyment. Right? So then, why you would give up ego? Because then you're going to lose all that. So to take that step that even I have position, I have influence, I have all those things, But it's only being done to please Krishna, and what's the result? That's up to Krishna. That takes faith. So that's the actual thing. We see is Nityananda Prabhu is out, you know, in the marketplace of the holy name, and you simply have to come and pay the price, and you can take the name. And that price is faith. Shraddha. Without faith, the process doesn't work. So if you have a devotee that's able to follow all the principles, able to do, can quote the philosophy, but doesn't have any faith, then their Krishna consciousness would be weak. Because it's based on faith, it's not based on the other things. The other things are assets that they can use so nicely in Krishna's service. And if they put that faith in there, then they can do so much for Krishna.
So if you don't have the faith, he's acting like a material. If you want to control it, you want to ask it.
That's right. But it may be more hidden. It may be more in the mode of goodness than passion or ignorance. You know, by sadhana and this, it's come up to that. So that's why one always has to be aware of what's going on. Because automatic means it's automatic, but in that you should be aware of the automaticness. Right? You put stuff, you flick the switch, automatically the light goes on. Right? But you had to flick the switch. Right? You know, there has to be current in the line. So, when Prabhupada says automatic, that Krishna kind of automatic, that's if you are conscious of performing the process that he's given, automatically you'll develop prema. But if automatic means I just sit back, you know, it's automatic, the light will go on. No, it won't work. You have to get up, go over, push the switch. That's all you've been told. The rest of it automatically will happen. So if you get up, you chant Hare Krishna, you do your service, you try to do it to please Krishna, you take prasadam, you associate with devotees, automatically you'll develop prema. But if you don't make that endeavor, then it won't work, because endeavor is the process. That's the whole key. We're doing some. I don't know if I mentioned this. We had discussed this before, but then it struck me just 2 days ago. Because we're doing this work on grammar, the whole concept of grammar. And because English itself doesn't have a grammar, it's a borrowed language from everywhere else. So generally what they do is root English grammar like in Latin. That's the general use. So, you know, why Latin? We'll take it back to Sanskrit. So in that, then it's described that you have an activity, which is a verb. Did I describe this before? No. I mentioned that. No. Something like that. You have an activity. That's a verb. Now, then, anything that does anything is a noun. Verbs don't do anything. Verb is that it's being done. The noun does it. The person, place, the thing is where it happens. Right? Just that it's happening. The nouns are interacting, that's called the verb. So those nouns connected with the verb, those are special, and there's six kinds. So there's the subject, means the one who's doing the activity. There's the object, which means the activity through which you're going to get the result you want. Then there's the result. Then there's the instrument that helps you get that object. Right? It means to get the object, to get the result, but you have an instrument to help you get the object. Then you need a place for all that to take place. It doesn't happen in the space, right? And it all has to have been arranged in one place. Otherwise, it won't work. There has to be a source of all that activity. So those six nouns, then it happens with the verb, whatever it is. So the interesting thing is, it just struck me when Prabhupada says in the Nectar Devotion, Krishna is the supreme subject and Radharani is the supreme object. That's taken from grammar. Because generally devotees, most I talk to, will reverse it. Krishna is the supreme object, is what you're trying to get, and the subject is Radharani. But in grammar it doesn't, because object doesn't mean what the goal. Object means through which you get the goal. So then if we apply what Rupa Goswami said through this, then you have Krishna is the subject, right? He's the karta, he's the doer. Radharani is the object. She's the, what is it, karna. She's the cause of getting the result. What's the result is, the goal is, that exchange of prema. So that's the goal. That's the third now. Right? Then the instrument is the devotees. And the paraphernalia the devotees use. So the jivas, they're the instrument that assists Radharani in her service to Krishna. Then the place is the Lord's place of pastimes. And the arrangement of all that is Yoga Maya. So, So then when that's there, then one can function. Is that all of that is connected to Krishna, it works. Otherwise, then the source becomes Mahamaya, not Yogamaya. And then the place becomes the place of our activity for getting our own benefit. Then the object changes. Instead of being Radharani, it'll be something else, a wife, a kid. This, our instruments will be different, not devotional paraphernalia. Like that. Then because our goal changes. So that's the whole thing. It's very, very nice. That's the fun. Is that right there is grammar. Everything else is the detail of that. How the nouns will go together, how they change, how the verb, the different kinds of, like that.
So the problem is actually so precise with these words. Mm-hmm. And everything has so much difference. I read a quote yesterday, though. Every day has a quote you have brought.
Oh, yeah.
There's only two things, Maya and Krishna. Krishna means devotional service. It can be spoiled by self-motivation.
Yeah. Exactly. And you see, if you look at any difficulties that are coming off, generally between devotees, is based on that. There's no real problems. We create the problems. Right? That's the thing. There's no problems. In devotional service, there's no problems. Because even by material standards, you'd say it's a problem, it's not a problem. Because all the problems, whatever there is, have already been shown in the Vedic literatures and how devotees have gone through, no problem. Right? It means Dhruva Maharaj, you know, gets, you know, how you say, neglected by his father, you know, his brother gets killed, you know, then Yudhishthira loses everything, Ram loses his wife, all these, they all constantly, but they all go on, because they all just remain in the proper consciousness. So, there's no problems in Krishna consciousness. The only problem is being Krishna conscious. That famous quoted Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, right? There's no shortage of anything in the material world, only Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, so much is there. You deserve it, it comes to you. You don't deserve it, go somewhere else, you know? Like that. So that's the... So, thank you. Gajarashi Mahabhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Samadhita Bhakti ki, Jani Dago Bhakti ki.